folks. Welcome to the Musky 360 podcast, a Jaybird.
Steve, what's happening?
It is freezing.
Yeah, likewise.
Nothing. Well, you chose to live there. I did not. Yes, yeah, this is.
Yeah, you're the near, dear, what do you call it? Near deep south? What do you call Tennessee?
Mid-south.
Mid-south, okay.
Yeah, we're not here for this kind of crap. Not interested in it. No.
Right. You had highs in the 30s today, right?
Yeah, it's like 31, spitting snow, just absolutely disgusting. Fortunately, it's just a. No way.
Yeah. I know.
No one in their right mind would choose to live in such squalor. No way. Not worth it.
Ice fishing right around the corner, Steve. Oh, You're welcome to come up.
Nope.
Casey will take you out.
How about that's a big negatory? I'm going to pass. on that. There's a reason that serial killers per capita are higher from Wisconsin and Minnesota than any other state. You know, think about it.
Do the math
for yourself, folks. Do the math. Sounds like one of these flat earther videos. Do the math. The answer's obvious right there. No, I am freezing to death. Yesterday, it was funny. You know, out on the boat and knew it was coming. And the drop from 60 to about 40 while you're on the water, it was like, whoa.
Yeah.
That was a dramatic shift, you know. Fish were responding. Let me put it that way. So that was kind of interesting to watch that in real time. Decided to take today. Let's take today off, Jay. Today's a good day to just sit back there and then... we'll get to the post-frontal shenanigans there tomorrow. But, yeah, just a slap-in-the-face kind of weather front there, I think, for anybody that has any that lives in a civil location. Other than that, what's it looking like up there? Is it kind of wrapping up? What's your vibe? I got a text. I got a text from little Smitty a few minutes ago. He's in the deer stand behind the old folks' home.
Okay.
Not deer hunting. Him this morning he's hunting, too. Yeah, nonetheless.
I thought he was off today. It's been cold. I mean, the last 3 days have been sub-freezing highs. So I actually, driving to work this morning, I passed a couple real small lakes, and one of them was froze over, one of them was open. A few people that were in this morning that were grabbing suckers and whatnot said, you know, they've seen a few lakes or whatever where ice was forming a little bit. Mm. Just small lakes. Big lakes will be open for a while. I mean, the long range is pretty good. It's supposed to be 50s or at least 50 plus, excuse me, this weekend.
Yeah.
So beyond that, I don't know. But it's going to take an awful lot more to get the mid and the big size lakes to actually freeze up before Thanksgiving.
Yeah. Well, you might make it, might not. I mean, you still have a chance to get out there and sucker it up, you know. I mean, tis the season. I was talking to Danny Herbeck, that scourge, a few minutes ago.
How's he doing up there?
Well, he's Canadian, so he's got that going against him.
Ouch.
There's that. You know, he's up there working on some more Sauvage gear. Stuff, but no, he said, you know, upper 30s, low 40s water temp, can still get out. Obviously you're on some big water, and that's kind of getting to the nitty gritty there. I don't know how much, you know, last year, I think we talked about last week that there was a little bit of a warm up, right, that happened where there's some really good fishing to be had late in the fall. And this year, believe it or not, from front to back, if you really think about it, has been one of the more temperate, what I would call classic kind of years, as far as, you know, the ice came off when it should have, Jay. Right? Wasn't early, wasn't late. And the seasonality was kind of just what you'd expect. I mean, as far as when things were happening, you know, kind of in retrospect looking at it, where, you know, everybody's griping this, that, and the other, but it's been pretty consistent. I mean, fall, you know, fall for me in the South, definitely you expect it to just go from 85 degrees to 40. You know, that's the typical as of late, where it's just like, you know what I'm saying? Like there's 1 week where it just bangs off, you know?
Yeah.
But it's actually been gradual, which is interesting. And it's a different take where, you know, for patterning wise, it's been pretty dang good where you go, okay, cool. I do have 60s, like transitional temperature zones, if you will, transitional bandwidths of temperature, where, you know, there's a lot of times where you go from, you know, upper 60s, low 70s to wham, bam, in a week and a half, you're upper 50s. You know what I'm saying? It's been pretty gradual, which is interesting to watch because in years past, it has not been, you know, pretty much.
Yeah, for the most part, yeah, I'd agree. You know, for the, around here in the upper Midwest, it's pretty much the same thing, you know, and then we were complaining not too long ago, early fall. Remember, it was like, oh, it's so warm. It's so warm, you know, but it's as soon as we got later into, I forget exactly, you know, by early October. Yeah. About a month ago, maybe a little bit, maybe 5 weeks ago, you know, it started to transition into normal temps
kind of smooth
turnover came. And, you know, that 60 to 50 degree transition happened fairly quickly. The lakes turned over really like they should, you know, in a week or less. And so no complaints. I mean, you know, like Herbeck was in last week, Thursday, I think. And, you know, he was talking about he stole some baits.
Yeah, he did.
Yep. And right in the coat there, just boom, he just snuck
right
out.
There,
and no, he was talking about, you know, we were complaining that there was some cold weather and more colder weather coming. We weren't complaining about it. We were just, you know, bringing it to his attention because he hasn't been in the Northwoods for a while. And he was asking about water temps and stuff like that. And he was just getting here. And he's like, well, it is November.
Yeah, I know it is.
You know, it's like it's November in northern Wisconsin. I mean, the guy's, you know, he's got more experience than just about anybody living when it comes to, you know, late fall musky fishing. Mm-hmm. He's seen it all. So he's like, no, this is perfectly normal. And he's got a bunch of guys. He's going to be out hammering.
Yeah.
You know, doesn't matter if it's 30 degree high, he's going to be out there. So,
yeah, living the dream, he says.
I would say at least another couple weeks around here for sure.
Yeah. I mean, it's like I said, you have your bumps in the road as far as temp and stuff, but it's interesting. You know, it kind of smoothed yourself out there. And been crazy. Been a crazy week for me. I think I called you earlier in the week having surreal moments running around in the woods there. So bopping around. That was ridiculous. I got to spend a little bit of time with my friend Rick Klun there, and gonna have him, I think, Jay, possibly next week, working on. He's a busy man as well. Have the goat of fishing.
The goat of fishing. I mean there's gonna be a great conversation. Boys, I look forward to it. He is
the greatest of all times when it comes to slinging a rod and a reel. And get him on here and try to pick his brain a little bit, because I think there's a ton to learn from, you know, everybody. And I mean, realistically, that guy has made his entire career off the backs of crankbaits and spinnerbaits, and that's really what he's known for. And he and I have some interesting conversations. It's funny because, you know, you sit there and you pick somebody's brain, and it's kind of, you know, it's a cool experience where I was able to just sit down with him for about 2 hours, and we're shooting some video stuff, and there's no distractions, right? He's in his element. It's just he and I, and we're able to just get going. You know, it's like you were just shooting the shit, and there's no prying eyes or whatever. There's no producer or whatever. And realistically, the takeaway that I had from that conversation was the same. One of the tenets of what we talk about, you know, that baits are tools, right? And that it's proximity. It was funny the way he put it. You know, that proximity mattered. The tighter the bite window was, and I'm sitting here going, "This is one of the most storied tournament anglers. You know, most recognizable anglers in the world."
And, four Bassmaster Classic championships.
Four classics, and then a million other wins, and it just kind of was, you know, the old, it's like, there's the meme, like, don't recite the old magic to me. I was there when it's written, from like Lord of the Rings or whatever. I mean, like the dude was there, you know, from kind of day one. And it just reiterated a lot of things that we kind of harp on, which is, you know, you've got to hit your running depths. It's so important to understand where that bait's going to be running. You know, the way he put it, his takeaway, and of course, I'm asking the questions here, and the camera's rolling, and, you know, I'm kind of picking his brain. You know, he was like, this is the law of conservation of energy, which is like, we're always talking about calorie conservation. But he's like, bass are doing the same thing, which is interesting. So we'll get him on here and pick his brain kind of from a general angling standpoint. And, you know, I thought about, we had the conversation the other day here on the show about rods. I think, you know, somebody had asked about rods, and I kind of went down that rabbit hole about the one, you know, doing it with one rod. Right.
Yeah, we did. Yep, that was
and
good.
That it's like I said, harken to that, where he and I were laughing about that. He said, I'm a rod sponsor's nightmare. Nobody sponsors him for rods still.
Yeah, you did tell me that about the conversation. Yeah, that's funny.
Yeah, it's just like, what are you going to do? Sell one rod? Because I'm going to tell you, you can throw one rod.
Yeah.
You know, so, but interesting. We'll get that queued up here, but kind of cool. Spend a little bit of one-on-one time there. You know, they've got some some cool stuff going on at Livingston with him and some other stuff in the hopper there. But to that point, I am stoked, Jay. I've actually got the finals coming here very shortly for your Banshee, your Menace, and the Critter. So okay. We do have them on the website, but it's time to at least pay attention to those boys and goys of the pre-signups on that. Those will be showing up for 2026, which is crazy that it's going on 2026. But didn't think I'd live to 26, Jay, much less 2026. But here we are, and you got to put up with me. But the baits will be here after the first of the year. Obviously going to show you how to work them, do all the video stuff. I've got warning, Jay, here I'm sitting on piles of video I shot this summer of the prototyping of these. So great, have fun editing them, Jay. Of the beat down we put on fish. But I actually talk about the weather and the up and downs of the fall transition. I've actually been doing really well on Critter, which is funny. Of once you look at those baits, people get it, like, okay, I understand Menace. It's kind of like a, you know, you can work it like a tube, or you can work it like a pull pause bait. Cool. Banshee, self-explanatory. It's like a, you know, it's a triple D or a double D in a tiny form, period. Right. It's a small, musky twitch jerk bait. If you ever fish like a Rachel or a triple D or a double D, it's a suspending jerk bait, right? That cranks down to wherever you want it, and you twitch it back and whackety schmackety. You control it, blah, 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 blah. But Critter is the one that's going to mess everybody's head up the most, Jay. We saw it at the Bash this year where, you know, I had at the Muskie Shop Bash, I had the baits I had to take to ICAST and the Bash. Like, ICAST and the Bash were like days on top of each other. And it was funny. Like, everybody picked that bait up because it's just so funky. Doing that thing with a real stop motion, I've just been crushing, Jay. Crushing fish. And it's so funny. It's one of the smallest, I think it's the smallest musky, other than like a micro Medusa, one of the smaller musky soft plastics you're going to see. But it's far heavier than any of that crap. So
the rate of fall, it's got a sink rate.
Yeah, it's 2 feet.
What are you doing when you retrieve that in terms of, like, are you counting that down a bit before you start your retrieve?
No. The way I work that bait, we can crawl down it real heavy, but with that, you know, just tease them. You're going to tease them a bit. So, right now, in and around old weeds, right? You got dead and dying weeds. I got, you know, cool water and all this fun stuff. Throw it out, and obviously your cast in general is landing towards the shallower area, if you will, right? So it's just taking a 5-3-1 reel, turn, pause, turn, pause. And I've been telling folks on the boat, clients, I say, basically, kind of do a "we will rock you" retrieve, right? Like a right? It's pretty easy. Everybody knows "we will rock you." So it's a pretty easy cadence for people. And it's just like turn, pause. Turn, pause. And on the pause, when I built that thing out, I mean, that bait's about 2 ounces of lead. It's a weaponized sinker. And it falls really quick. So you've got 2 seconds or 2 feet of fall per second. So as it goes forward, and it's actually doing, in that retrieve, it looks like a miniature tube, which is just deadly. So when you reel the slack up, it pops back up, comes back up vertical when you come off. And so it's got this really lunging up and down like sine wave motion to it, which is going in and out of their visual range. And if you're doing it over top of cabbage, it's getting down to the cabbage coming up. And this summer in Canada, same thing. I was thrown into the shallows with a turn pulse kind of thing, right? And then as well, playing with it before anybody really knew what it was, the trick with that bait for me was using in the early season. I knew what the goal was, which was I wanted to have a bait I could kind of do 3-4 things with. The first of which was in the early season, the prototyping stage, was using it as a straight retrieve bait because I hate rattle traps. I'm bored with them, right? Done it. Mm-hmm. Sick of them. And you can't rattle traps. You kind of always kind of do a hoppy lopy motion. And so as a straight retrieve, it's killer because you have the top little paddle tail on the back and the two little fins. So I'll throw it out, cast it, turn the handle, right? Dummy proof. Coming in, looks different, feels different, bam, really good over those shallow flats or over those early weeds like a small bucktail. So you've basically got a counterpoint to, say, rattle traps and like 500, 600, 700 size bucktails there. Where it's completely different and it works in that same kind of vein, if you will, for where you would throw and, those.
Yeah, plus you have that aggressive tube-like action too.
Well, that's the thing. That. Yeah, you turn it around. Beautiful. And so yeah. If you can't tell. I mean, the other ones are badass. Don't get me wrong, but that one has been just shining bright like a diamond, Jay. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then turning it around as a jig. So that one's going to be interesting because I actually have been vertically jigging it, and as small as it is, it stays where it should. So it's going to be interesting to see where people take that. But anyway, so there's going to be some new that coming up. What else? You got comings and goings, folks. We have a couple things. You got playing cards, finally.
Yeah, finally, it's about time.
It's about time. Now you can finally gamble with Muskie playing cards, Jay. There you go. You can get them for your cabin. You're sitting there with your friends gambling your tackle box. I raise you a Hot Tails glider. What do you got? So... those just hit the shop. Cool little stocking stuffer. And it is the time to bring up the stocking of stuffing. Jay, what do you plan on stuffing this year?
For stock, well, that's number one, plus the coloring book.
What do you got? Anyway, no, it's that time of year, and people have actually been emailing the app already. I'm sure you've heard about it. So the Black Friday sale, going to be big. Going to be big,
yes, it
big,
will.
Big. So keep your eyes. Yeah, that's here in a second. So not far off on the Black Friday. So just fair warning. We'll let you know. People get eager this time of year.
It will be much more than one day. Let's put it that way, too.
There will be sales.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever. Calm yourselves, folks. And every year, by the way, Jay, it's just people's wives emailing.
My husband, Marty, what should I get him for Christmas?
Mm-hmm. Get him a Lynchum swim bait. It's only $74.99. No, that's a new little addition there. What's up with that bait? Haven't seen him
yet. Yeah. Very cool. Well, it's a traditional swim bait style. You know, it's jointed in the middle.
Right.
It's got some kind of synthetic tail that's replaceable.
Nice.
Pins are adjustable. It's adjustable. Obviously, you can put on different hooks to get it it's fairly suspending the way it is, but it's, you know, you put on heavier hooks, it's going to work deeper. No lip on it. It's got that fish-like body, I guess, that you might have seen on smaller bass-type swim baits. So it's oversized. It's
six and a quarter inches.
Yeah. Brand new. I think we got them in Friday or something. So, oh, man, I've got some lures to get on the water. And I got to get some stuff shot. It's just been so cold.
This thing
looks awesome.
This has been the year of new stuff. There's so much cool stuff this year. But anyway, check that out. Anyway, we have neglected. We have, after Steve Herbeck's awesome sucker talking, right?
That was last week. Yeah, he killed it.
You know, you catch him off the sauce.
Gotta help the guy out when you can.
Catch him off the sauce and he'll tell you something good. Anyway, all right, let's get to it here. What do we got?
We still got to do What's Eating Herbeck, or that commenter.
Yeah,
weeks ago.
You're supposed to come up with a contest. Come up with that for next week. That's a project for you. What's What's eating Gilbert's grape? What's eating Herbeck's gripe? We're gonna stay away from anything that involves eating. And then, yes, we need to dedicate some time. Remind me at some point. I will get him on to just record some gripes. Speaking of gripes, I say this actually, and this is true. Mm-hmm. Danny Herbeck's got some.
Uh-oh. Now,
and I just noticed the thread here. Gripey Herbeck's. But possibly we might just do a full tilt guide sesh, you know, get real mean with it. We'll see how he's feeling on it. Anyway,
okay,
John, I have a planned trip with two close friends to Muskie Fish late November. Perfect timing here, right? I've been seriously musky fishing about 2 years, but never have fished this late into the fall. The lake we are fishing is probably 1,000 acres deep and clear. I have two main questions. Obviously, we're going to dress very warmly. I've already bought 300 hand warmers, but I want to ask if there are any necessities for late fall cold water fishing. What should we bring to battle the elements easier? Right. And then he wants to talk tactics, which I've been told the lake notorious for low numbers, but holds some trophies. Our plan was mostly fish with suckers, drag them around slow and deep. Reading that, big suspending jerk. Basically, listen to Herbie's game plan on that. You know, as far as... You know, but no lake is not worth it, right? He's saying it's a low density lake with big fish, and realistically, I mean, if they're there, you can catch them. I love lakes where people say they're all dead. Good, that means nobody's fishing, right?
Yeah.
Oh, don't go over there. You know, everybody. Wants
oh, they got fished out there.
Oh yeah, the they were speared. Whatever, right? Yeah. Basically, what you want to look at your rubber baits. Still, something that's not—it's not overlooked, but kind of in the know. Don't be afraid of your big swim baits, nice and slow, either, even down to 40. And that's something. Obviously, working on Mustang Magnus, you know, I've kind of transitioned now, Jay. It's kind of Magnus time for me. Running the Magnus with the full weight in it, right? So get my depth. And running that with another kind of turn, pause, reel manipulation. And something, tangent incoming, Jay. Tangent incoming. There's something to be said, and there's a deep, deep rabbit hole we need to go down and retrieves here in the near future. But, you know, you have to give your baits action. That's one thing. You can't just throw a bait out there and turn the handle and expect it to work with minimal effort, right? However, when we get below 55, there is an argument to be said about keeping things vanilla, right?
Vanilla.
You go to Baskin Robbins, they got 32 flavors, but you order vanilla because you're boring, right? That's what I'm getting at. Vanilla gorilla. Anyway, so you don't want to get too crazy with it. And that's one thing with swim baits in cold water. You know, I love to like speed burst, rip, pull, manipulate the bait, all this stuff, really trying to quote unquote trigger the strike throughout the entire retrieve. Colder water, at times, when things are not perfect, it is better off to just go really plain Jane for the majority of the retrieve. However, a giant caveat being before we get boat side, in that last third of the cast, you do need to do something to make an effort to elicit a strike before we get to the figure eight, right? But just putting that in your head is that sub 55, a lot of times the overreactive, erratic, crazy, you know, everything in the kitchen sink kind of retrieve is not going to get the same amount of attention as times it's just a low rod angle and turn the handle slow. Right. And I think that's overlooked because you kind of come out of this transitional thing when, you know, low 60s, they're still moving and grooving. You know, there's an argument, like I said, in my mind, from my experience on the water, 55 is kind of really a cutoff temp on activity levels because they tend to seek deeper refuge and they come out a little bit icy box. You know, they don't want it as ripping fast every time. So this is the time of year and you know, the colder we get, the more icier you get, the more apt I am to go with a boring, straight vanilla, nothing fancy retrieve for a lot of the retrieve, right? Mind you, with say a Magnus, you know, they're just off the boat. I might let the head drop a little bit and kind of dead stick it, pop it before I come into the eight. But that's just something to look at. Anyway, he's talking about Jay. The first question the guy asks, what should we do as far as prep, right? And it is that time of the year. We're getting down to the frozen chosen here. Those that are foolish enough to still be musky fishing. You know, what does it take to keep a lot of the gear in tip-top shape? First and foremost, live and die by WD-40, right? The WD yes. stands for water dispersant. It will save your reels. Biggest thing you can do, you can always take Vaseline and put it in your eyelets if you have eyelets that are freezing. If you get into serious, serious cold, let's say you're sucker fishing and it is that high of 30, right? It happens all the time. One thing you can do is you can coat the eyelets of your sucker rod with Vaseline. It's messy. It's gross. But guess what they will not do? They will not freeze up. And a lot of times people set that sucker out. They got the rod there. There's a little bit of moisture on the line. Mm-hmm. And you go to set the hook and your reel's froze and the line is froze to the eyelets. Because that line is going to delay on the eyelets, right? And it can freeze to the rod. I've seen that happen. So it's crucial to make sure that your gear is kind of freeze proof. I don't know if that's a real term, but let's go with it. And so I want to make sure my rods, reels are ready to go. You know, a conversation all the time. When should I clean and maintain a reel? When should I do this? When should I do that? In the summer, it's whatever, right? Whatever. When we get into the winter, I'm not worried about the reel maintenance. I'm worried about the reel preparation. Which is before I go out and it's sub-freezing, the first thing I'm doing is I'm taking, it's probably against the manufacturer's warranty, a cheap old can of like white lithium grease, spray the pole, right? Or WD, but I like the lithium grease because it sticks better. Just so I have something fresh on there, you know, that is going to keep the moisture out. That's going to keep you from breaking the pole, P-A-W-L. Which is the little piece of metal that moves back and forth on the worm gear of your reel. So if you flip your reel over, you'll see this metal piece, a spindle, if you will, that looks like X's. That is the worm gear. And there's a little piece of metal, like I said. You want to make sure that is lubricated with something that is going to help provide water shedding. Be it reel grease, be it lithium grease, be it WD. That's usually your first point of failure. That likes to freeze up before anything else. But make sure that everything's lubricated and ready to go. And again, sub-freezing temps, cold weather, over-lubricate the reels is kind of my motif. What else do they prepare for?
Yeah, the exterior, not the interior.
Right. Yep. Right. Trolling motor, same thing. I've seen it more times than you can imagine where I'm trying to get I run the I can't remember the names. I run the big boy Minn Kota that's not self-deploy. It's the Altera. No, whatever. Whatever.
yeah.
Altrex. There you go. Big brain stuff there. Altrex. So I run the Altrex, which is like an old cable steer, but it's not actually real cable steer. It's like servo motor steer, whatever. But that hinge, you deploy that motor, water gets in the hinge, and you either can't get the motor deployed or the motor won't come up because it is frozen. So any hinges on your trolling motor, any areas that you need to move are worth lubricating before you're heading out, right? Other things I like to have on the boat if it's really that cold, you know, if you can safely rock a propane heater, that's good. Smitty, absolutely. Who we were talking about earlier, I know a trick of his is just keeping like a little metal bucket with a sterno in it to thaw reels, where he'll actually put, you know, just a little heat source. And that's the problem. One thing I'll get at with reels, you know, all of the line we're using, all this braid is plastic, right? So you can't really apply direct heat to it. If you ever I do it all the time, I'll burn like the tagging off a line and it just, you know, it's burns immediately. So you can't apply direct heat. If you were like to hit it with too direct of a heat, you're actually weakening it. So you want like an ambient heat that you can attempt to thaw these reels out. if you get frozen reels. The only other, whatever, extra gloves, something everyone forgets about when you're fishing in the late season is how are you going to release the fish in cold water, right? Fish is in the net. You got your big old jacket on. You got your fish monkey gloves on or whatever. I swear by it. I'm not endorsed by them, but I swear by them, by God. They're awesome. Those fish monkey Sherpa gloves, but whatever gloves. So you're down in the net. Now you got to get this critter out, right? And you got to stick your hands in the lake. I always keep a pair of like little rubber gloves. In the past, I've done it literally kitchen gloves, Jay. Like dollar store women's washing the dishes kitchen gloves can be good just to keep your hands dry. Because once you lose your hands on the boat, it's hard to get them back. It is really hard to get warm your hands back up.
For sure. It's very difficult. So, yeah. And dry your hands off before you, otherwise you're going to be going through gloves.
And that is the net, a towel. And I don't like keep a towel on the boat during the summer. Like, oh, but little hand towel just to dry your hands off because you don't want to put wet hands in gloves or even damp hands or anything. Right. So I like to have some rubber gloves to deal with the fish in the net because you're exposing your hands to that cold water for a duration of time, trying to get the hooks out, yada, yada, yada. And then I want to take the gloves off. And I did get my hands wet. I have a hand towel to dry them off so I can put my gloves on easily. And I'm back to par opposed to I've done it where it's like we catch fish. I didn't have that stuff on board. I get my hands all wet and I'm kind of like dry my hands off on my coat. Right. And I'm jamming them in the gloves and my hands are freezing. And I'm kind of like, okay, I don't know now how much more gas got in the tank because I can't feel my fingers. Yeah. That's important. That only other thing.
Your fingers and the fingers and toes go either one. And it's going to make a short day. Of for exactly. Sure. It's
worth, I mean, it's simple stuff. You can, save the day here. The only other thing that I've noticed or found here as of late, because hot hands, everybody loves a pack of hot hands, Jay. It's like black magic in a little white bag, right? I don't know what's in there.
Yeah, a chemical you don't want to get too close to.
Don't eat it.
Yeah, don't cut them.
Promise that. Yeah, we're not eating that.
Not edible.
Right? Don't. Do not. But if you did, tell us what happened. But don't eat it. But anyway, you got this chemical reaction, warm you up, yada, yada, yada. It's great. Well, the modern thing now are these hand heaters that are USB rechargeable, and they're pretty ripping good. And I've actually got a couple of them now, and I'm pretty impressed. So those little packets tend to wear out, but you can get a lot of time, a lot of lifespan out of it. And I keep one in case I lose my hands. Hands get too cold. It's pretty handy to have around. Just throw it in your boat or throw it in your jacket, have it charged up. And it's just basically, I'm guessing, Jay, it's just a lithium battery that's about to explode. Right. It's just more. Oh, it's hot.
Oh, they're thoroughly tested before they put those in those garments, Steve. Don't worry about it.
I know the guy at the factory in Shenzhen. after he tested 30,000 vapes that day in a row, he was working on the hand heater line. Yeah. Now that they're pretty solid. So that's worth having. Anything else you can think of, Jay? Things that are handy in the boat when we're talking cold weather.
It's just about it's like if you want to cut corners on your gear, it's just you got to look at it like you're going out ice fishing. You know, you are going to get cold. Just you will get cold. Yeah. You will, it will hurt a bit, and it's because as soon as you get your hands wet,
you're done.
Whether it is and your gear, it's just like ice fishing gear is made for it, not this gear.
No.
So, if you get the option to spend on something that can plug in and keep you. Whether it's your boots or your jacket or something, it's worth it.
I rock the USB sole warmers too, by the way. Those are bad to the bone.
So you can plug that in and get heat, and you can plug in your subwoofer that way too.
You could. I'm wired for sound. I have the USB insoles. They're amazing. You just take them out of your boots, plug them in, you put them in your boots. You got hot bunions, Jay. You got hot tootsies, they say, all day long. What else?
Awesome.
The only other thing I'd say is this. Get off the soapbox because it's just helpful prep things. Out of an abundance of safety, I've said it in the past, but I'll say it again. The time of year, do yourself a favor. I don't know if the Muskie Shop has them, It doesn't matter. Go to your local Wally World and get yourself some of those space blankets. They're like a buck, right? It's those little folded up foil blankets.
You've had to use them before.
When someone falls in the lake, you need it. And it happens more than, you know, just clumsy. You had a few too many Pepsis. Boom, you're in 50 degree water will knock you out, right? So you get in that cold water, you better have something because you might be 30 yeah. minutes from the ramp. You might be, it happens. Yeah. So what I try to do is I have a couple of those space blankets. I just put them in a little Plano box and stash them for the winter. Handy to have to at least give you something to work with, right? Yeah. Other things,
hey, backup gloves. What's that non-slip stuff that guys are putting on their boat? You know, it's like non-slip, some kind of textured deal for icy, you know, boat decks.
What are you talking
about? You seen that stuff?
No.
I'm not sure what it is.
Are you talking about the foam stuff, or is it like a spray?
I don't know. No, it looks like some kind of rubberized carpeting type thing you lay down on your deck.
Oh, well, I'll tell you that.
It's a non...
What's that? A trick back in the day, and it still works, I call them kitchen mats. They're rubber mats with... They just have holes punched in them. And like if you ever worked in a restaurant... Okay. Yeah. Well, that's the cheap option. I don't know what... There's sea deck and all the other stuff that's boat deck that's supposed to not freeze up. But I've always... Like, let's say I go out, and heck, tomorrow might be the day where, okay... Got a little moisture on the boat or, you know, things freeze pretty quick. Even on carpet, I like those kitchen mats with they're just heavy rubber mats. They're not going to slide around on the boat, and they will save you. They will save you all the time, and that thing's not going to slide anywhere. I don't know what you're talking about per se, because like on the deck of my boat where it's all metal, I have like the gritty paint. Is this a paint or what is it, Jay?
No, it's more like what you're talking about, but it's made for boats. You know, okay. It sounds like it's something new on the market, and I'm not familiar with who makes it or where it's available, anything about it.
Yeah, I mean, that's helpful. We'll look it up.
Yeah.
No, it's worth
it. So I thought you might know.
No, I just didn't know off the top of my head, but, you know, it sounds Dorkshire Farms here, but it's worth thinking about these things in advance before you just ruin, you know, you can have a real bad time. Why not? If we're on the tip of cold water or cold weather fishing, drain your engine, please. Right? The kiss of death is getting off the water and like not lowering your engine and getting all the water out of it. Okay? I'm not a boat mechanic. I'm not going to, don't call me when you screw your impeller up. What I do when I get off the water, I put my engine straight vertical and I start it and I let it run for a few seconds. Like 1/1000, 2/1000, that's good enough for me. And what that'll do then, you know, your impeller, which is what is purging or sucking water out and compressing the water and cooling your engine, that allows it just a few seconds to dry run to try to force anything else out, right? So lower your engine all the way before you put it on your transom saver. And when you get home, store it vertically so the rest of the water can come out. There's always water in the engine. So that just kind of miss that little kiss of death. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, nothing will slow your musky fishing like blowing the block. Something else, God, just recovering all the cold weather stuff here. When you're on the water and you're running, you run your engine and you go hit spot X, Y, and Z and you're not moved for a while, you can get what they call duck hunter's freeze. Where the actual the cooling water will freeze in the head because the power head is getting that cold that fast, right? Say it's like 30, well, usually not even the 30s. I've fished plenty of days, Jay, in the 20s. And periodically start your engine. You just kind of put that in your head where you warm it back up, even if it's just to idle. You know, say you just start it, let it run for 3-4 minutes while you're still fishing at idle, just to keep the block warm if it's exceptionally cold. Just a thought there. You know, what do you do? Next, Scott. Very sad to say about chasing on Caesars Creek every weekend since May. This guy's struggling on a body of water that has a bunch of fish. Let me see. Turn chickens. So, anyway, this guy's fishing Caesars Creek in Ohio, right? Known to have muskies, and he's been struggling. Lost one, not a lot of success. Jay, what do you think? We're coming into basically, you know, mid-fall year time. We're talking, you know, Central Ohio kind of body of water here, right? River systems, mm-hmm. it's a lake, but whatever. We're looking at a body of water. We're trying to score one of our first muskies this time of year. What are you thinking?
Well, it's a creek.
It's Caesar's Creek, but it's not a creek. So I've fished it, but I was trying to set you up here, which is, you know, what kind of presentations would one throw this time of year if you're trying to score your first fish?
Yeah, find the deep water, find the pools, and slow down. Like you were talking earlier, like a Magnus, a heavily weighted Magnus, and other soft plastics are going to be, you know, your best artificial lure presentation. Something you can run slow that's got action when it's just sinking slowly, or depending on the depth. I mean, as long as you don't have to get down like 20 feet, if it's mm-hmm. if it's a river system that might, you know, have pools at 15 or something like that, that's perfect for shallow Medusas, shallow bulldogs, shallow toothy tufts.
Yep,
all those would be exceptional choices because they got a big profile, got lots of action. You can crawl that thing.
Yeah,
just little lifts of the rod. Just, you know, get it working. You know, I don't know how much current you got, but you can play with that, and I think that would be a great presentation to try there.
Slow things down and kind of keep them on point there. You know, it's a tough time of year if you're trying to score, you know, one of your first fish. You know, keep grinding. It's, you know, you just got to realize this time of year you need to slow her down. Noah, hey, fellas, can you go into the depth on a sucker figure eight for fall? Do the suckers know how to do it, or do I have to do it myself? Also, when coming in Lake Sinclair and fishing where bodies were designed. Thank you. Okay. So figure eighting for fall. I think he's joking. Do the suckers know how to do it for himself? Whatever. So let's say I'm sucker fishing, I'm going to figure it. The first thing that I'm going to do every single time, Jay, is I'm going to ensure that my bait is going by the sucker as close as I can get it, right? I want to lead my baits right to the sucker. Now, keep in mind that you want to ensure that you're not running your bait into the sucker. You're not running your lines into the sucker, right? You don't want to do that. But, you know, as far as that, get it close to it. I mean, you don't want to run it like with an inch. Maybe you could, but I just want to ensure that a following muskie is definitely going to see that sucker, right? Then I'm going to proceed into my normal figure eight, and quite often my suckers are at depth. So if I lead in the figure eight and that fish doesn't seem like it's really going to pop off, I'm going to try to go beneath the sucker if I can, which puts, imagine the suckers on, I'm a lefty, so imagine the suckers to my right. If he's not eating in the first or second turn, I'm going to try to drop that fish back down to the sucker and run my bait beneath it. So at a certain point, the sucker's the easier take than my bait that's heading down beneath it. Does that make sense conceptually, Jay? You get what I'm saying? I'm going to try to run it down and past the sucker where he's confronted with that thing again at a different angle, right? And I've seen if I can take that fish back down to where the sucker's at, often at times he'll just crack off on it and hit it, or it'll stop him dead in his tracks and my bait becomes kind of a mute point. The other thing I'd say is this, you got to look at it like it's a handoff.
Mm-hmm.
Don't keep figure eighting. Once he gets locked in on the sucker, I'm usually checking out with my bait most of the time, right? And so if he locks onto it, and I know he's done it, either he's, you know, he's taking a swipe at it, or I see it on live scope, or I visually see that fish is on that sucker, I'm going to nope out with whatever I'm throwing. With the healthy caveat being if it's a glide bait or a rubber bait, and I'll tell you why. So if he locks into that sucker and I have a glide bait or a rubber bait on, I'm going to let it fall past him in case he breaks off, that I can rip that thing up in quick fashion and re-engage that fish.
That's what I was thinking. That's what I was getting at. As long as it's a sinking bait, it's something you can drop that bait and do a little vertical jigging type thing and then bring it up.
Right. And
the entirety of the time it's near that sucker. So,
if let's say my sucker, in theory, sucker set at six, right? So the whole process here, I got a sucker down at six, and mm-hmm. I brought that fish in on a Magnus, right? Let's say in theory, Magnus is running four suckers at six. I come in, I do my turns. I brought it right by him. He stayed on the Magnus. I go around. Now I'm going to crouch down, jam the rod tip in. So I've got a 9-6 rod. I can definitely get it deeper than the sucker, lead it down, and hopefully he locks onto the sucker, right? If he doesn't follow, and then at this point, I'm definitely relying on live imaging. If he doesn't follow that bait and I come back up into my next turn with that Magnus and he's stuck on that sucker, I free sport immediately and let fall to the bottom. That's what I'm doing, and let there and stand there. I'm not doing anything with the bait. Nothing. I'm just holding on to it. I'm not letting it get snagged on bottom, but I've got it, say, let it fall down to 12. So I've got a musky looking and a sucker at six. I let that thing fall down about 6 feet lower than that, and it's just hanging there. It's doing nothing. And I'm watching on scope, or I'm waiting for him to eat. If he breaks away, I've already got a bait that I can potentially re-engage that fish with, instead of having to pick back up and throw back, right? Only with sinking baits, because I don't want like some crankbait floating on the surface above his head that I'm going to have to like jam down. So the second I see him kind of break off and lose interest, I'll just reel up into that thing and go back into an eight, and I've engaged him. That's not a surefire thing, trust me. But I have picked them up as kind of a re-engage or get his attention back. And the eats I've had doing that, it's 50-50. 50% I've gotten on the artificial that was reintroduced, and the other 50% I've gotten on them just turning back around and hogging off on the sucker that they could have eaten at any point. But that's what it took, right? So just a consideration there. Anyway. All right, Jay Kevin wants to know, looking at new outboards, what brands do you guys recommend? Any I should avoid? I'm not allowed to talk about this, Jay. So what do you got? I recommend Suzuki, the finest engines available. Jay, any commentary you got?
No, there's good and bad with anything. And within certain brands, sometimes they put out a motor that's problematic at times and they try to fix it as quick as possible. I don't have any opinion on that.
I can say this. I can say whatever I want. Well, no, I can't. But nonetheless, if you listen back to that one, folks, listen back to those episodes from a few years ago. Great relationship with Suzuki, bulletproof. I've had no problems out of mine. Zero. And run them hard. Maintenance is great. It's a premium priced engine. I mean, I don't think there's a problem. Like you said, Jay, everything's pretty kosher, but I love my Suzuki's, happy with them. No questions there.
Yeah, there you go.
All right, Brennan. What way do you guys prefer to add weight to your soft plastics? Do you prefer to have a weighted leader, or do you use like the chaos weights? What's your favorite method? I'll be honest with you. I know on this, I've been having pretty good luck. Jay, I like the new Savage Gear weights. Have you seen, you know I'm talking about, the store? Have you picked those up at all?
The clip-on ones?
Little clip-on weights. So,
yeah.
My Euro friends for years have been using bell sinkers, that the clip-on. It's literally a clip-on bell sinker that's like super fast for the on and off. Savage has done like a flattened sinker that works very well for me. It's actually, I've been using them on my critter prototypes. I've had pretty good luck. They fit on my alien eels very well, and soft plastics. They seem to fit pretty well with all of those. So I've liked that. For like my Mustangs, I'm using the chaos weights, the flat weights. So it depends on the bait, because I don't want, like on a swim bait, if you look at, say, like the way the Magnus is designed, Jay, that bait is in the head and you still got a ton of head wobble, right? I don't like changing the center of gravity of a swim bait like over the top. Does that make any sense? Like if I put the weight, like if I put that clip on the nose, it screws it up.
A lot of guys they're putting everything on the nose and right. They add more and more, and it's just like, well, the pitch is completely
different. Pitch is
different.
And so I prefer on my swim baits to use the flat style disc weights, I guess, whatever you want to call them. Yeah. And use that, you know, take off the hook and the split ring, slide it around the the anchor point there and then put it back on. That works pretty well for swim baits, whether it be a Mustang or Swimming Dog or Poseidon, whatever. That works pretty well. A little bit of variety. There's not one way, I guess, is what I'm realizing here. For me personally, you know, with Titans and all these other baits, you got the built-in weighting right there. That's a lot of the reason I did that. But again, with your rubber baits, I know what you're getting at, because it makes sense sometimes where you want to get a, you know, this profile down deep. So anything that's like a Bulldog or Medusa, I like those flat style weights that go in there. I've not used, Jay, you might be able to speak on it, the actual Bulldog weight. I haven't used one of those in eons, where it's like the weight that goes over the head. That's, yeah.
It's designed for the head only. Yeah.
Right.
I mean, and it serves its purpose, but yeah, if you get the flat rates or the clip ons, you know, split them up, put one on the front, one in the middle, right, and you get a more balanced descent, you know, and it's more in tune with the, you know, original design of the bait in terms of the pitch.
When I'll say that, yeah. And with all baits, perfectly put, which is the design. If you add weight to a bait and it changes the action of the bait, you need to be cognizant of it. I'm not saying it's right or it's wrong, but don't just throw weight on a bait and go, okay, I added an ounce. Well, is it impeding the action of the bait?
Mm-hmm.
And this is just, to be honest with you, I'm designing stuff now, Jay, that'll probably be like 2027, 2028. So I'm in bait builder mode in my head. Sorry for keep talking about baits. But when you change the weight of a bait, it can drastically change the action. And it's not dangerous, but you need to know what you're doing, right? And I've had guys message me and be like, I did this, 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 and this. My bait runs like crap. Well, that's because you changed the center of its action. You've changed its buoyancy dramatically. You know, like you can overdo it with a bait and you just go, all I added was a half ounce. From a bait designer standpoint, a half ounce of lead is a megaton, right? You can really do damage. I don't mean like damage to the bait, but it's just destroy the action of the bait. Because when I'm designing something from the ground up, I'm down to grams, right? Very, very minor changes in weighting can really dictate the action of a bait. So be careful, be judicious, but most of all, be observant, right? So you know what you're looking for first and foremost, right? Go, I want my crankbait to do this. I want it to float back extremely slow. I want it to sink, or I want it this. Make sure that you're adding weight in such a manner that it doesn't change that desired action. That's the most important thing I'm getting at, right? Don't just slap a weight on there and go, I'm not catching fish now. You know, you could have really, really killed the action of the bait, and it's all for naught. Rubber baits are pretty forgiving. Your Bulldogs and your Medusas, your rubber jerk baits are pretty forgiving. The thing that guys will do that's screwy on those, Jay, I've seen some people try to add weight to the back of the bait, which will actually make the bait fall tail down, right? So if you do it, say you add more, let's say in the front of the head of a standard, like the small Medusa, I'm guessing, I've cut them open and we've weighed them. Heck, we have a video of that, right? But yeah. I don't recall how much weight's in there, but let's say for argument's sake, say it's an ounce and a half, right? I've seen guys add like two disc weights or add extra weight in the back, right? Where the bait is either falling really flat, which is kind of cool, or it's falling backwards. And if that's not the desired effect and you're not paying enough attention to realize that, you know, okay, this thing is now falling backwards, so it's not gliding at all and the tails aren't necessarily getting the action that you're looking for, that can be problematic. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So be aware of that, and be aware with all your baits. There's kind of a, for lack of a better term, there's a center of gravity to all your baits, especially your glide baits. Glide baits exemplify this the best. The reason a bait glides left to right is because it's centered, right? So the weight, it's a pivot point. And so you know, you play with the kind of the pivot point of the body or the center of gravity, for lack of a better term, of the bait, you're going to get a dramatically different action. Make sure that's what you want. Be observant and do it judiciously. The only other thing I'd say about changing the weighting on baits, because it just said gliders, I'm staring at a bunch of them. If you're going to change the weighting on a glider, that can be a slippery slope. But the best way I've seen to do it, Jay, is with lead tape. And if I want a glider to go deeper, I just lead tape the entire thing. And I usually do it on the bottom, right? And I do it in one strip, top to bottom, right? Because I've not changed the pivot point. I've just added weight overall. That makes sense?
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
Instead of, I've not added weight to one of the hooks, which could change the pivot point dramatically. I just put lead tape on it and go, okay, there's one strip that goes from the very front to the very back of the bait. I've not changed the pivot point. I've just added weight overall. And that's actually helped quite a bit, because perfect example. Take a 6-inch Phantom and screw a weight into it and tell me the action's awesome. No, it sucks. Right?
Yeah, you're trying to create even weight dispersal
on a glide bait.
Mm-hmm.
I want the weight dispersed evenly across the bait. I actually have Hellhounds that are specifically rigged this way, where I've actually done a strip of lead tape over the head and the bottom of that bait to add weight to the entire bait. So I've weighted the bait entirely, but I've not changed its central point, so it still glides. And that's kind of something you need to consider, especially when you're playing with glide baits, is you can screw them up, but if you do that evenly, and that's kind of my trick with whether it be tennis racket tape or just storm, you know, the storm strips or whatever, and just do that as an even disbursement. You know, and some of the classic stuff. I mean, there's a lot of fun to be had playing with baits and action. If you look at some of your Jakes or some of these other baits where you add weight to the nose of the bait and you get a really cool different rise out of the bait. You know, if you can get a bait kind of raising tail up, that's a whole different look than the typical head up rise of your baits, right? And so you can play with it. There's a ton of ways, but don't be afraid of it. I guess the answer to Brendan's question there is there's not one way to do it. There's not like, hey, this is my favorite way. You got to kind of do it across the board. But I'd say, like I said, your flat weights, if your bait has a flat bottom, flat weight's a pretty solid way to do it. Your swim baits, like I said, the clip-ons. Realistically, Jay, I'd say crankbaits. I think the best way to reweight a crankbait is with storm dots and with lead strips. You know, you can get them to do some really wacky stuff. A little ninja trick I have, if you want to make a bait do stuff it shouldn't, is put like a crankbait. It's kind of like the Banshee. If you look at the Banshee, there's a removable weight in the bottom of that little Banshee because I get kind of that Duffish supernatural wonder side to side. Just put a bunch of storm dots on a crane bait, and you'll see exactly what I mean. You can get them to deviate by playing.
Yeah, and most crankbaits do not have a pre-drilled weight system ready to go. So that's the way to do it.
Yeah, but you know, just your placement, and I mean, that's kind of the fun of. I mean, you got a lot of time to throw baits. You know, if you look at the grand scheme of muskie fishing, Jay, there's a lot of times you're just looking at baits. Without a muskie involved. maybe your experience is different than mine, but I've spent more time looking at baits than I have looking at muskies hitting them. No doubt. And get to tweak them up. Anyway, I got to get in the hot tub, and I got a steak on the grill. It's that time of year where the hot tub is calling. Anyway, I guess, you know, well, next week we'll have the prize, Jay. We'll have the contest. It is the holidays. Let's dream up something worthy.
Yeah.
And hopefully we'll have Mr. Klun or something special for you next week. Anyway, Jay Bird, say good evening.
All right, guys. Thanks a lot.
Later.
Night.
Bye-bye now.